So we're at Perek Gimel, that's the third chapter. We'll just read it again. Yashkem Yoshua Baboker, the top here of page 198. Yoshua got up early in the morning. Yisu mehashitim, they traveled away from Shittim. Vayavo ad haYarden, they came to the Jordan. Hu v'chol bnei Yisrael, he together with all the Jews. And they slept there before they would cross the Jordan. After 3 days, and the policemen walked through the camp, and they commanded the people, telling them, when you will see the ark of the covenant of God your Lord, Hakohanim haLeviim nosim oso, and the Kohanim who are Leviim carrying it. V'atem tisumim komchem v'alachtem achrav, you should follow it. This verse becomes a source of great controversy in halachic literature. We know that in the desert the ark was carried by Bnei Kahas, by the children of Kahas, which was one of the three groups of Leviim. And they had a commandment not to use wagons. They had a commandment to carry it by hand or on the shoulder. That was a sign of honor to the ark, that the ark was never placed in a container, in a wagon. It was carried by humans. The Rambam says that you see from this verse, where Yoshua asks the Kohanim to carry, that the mitzvah of carrying the ark is really a mitzvah on Kohanim. Kohanim are supposed to carry the ark. So how come in the desert it was carried by Leviim? So the Rambam says there weren't enough Kohanim. In the desert all you had was 5 Kohanim. You had Aaron and his 4 sons. So all you have is Aaron and 4 sons. So between the 5 of them, there just wasn't enough manpower to go around to do all the service in the Mishkan, plus to be the ones to carry the ark and to, you know, manage all the Leviim who were doing the various other tasks, with the Mishkan taking it down and transporting it. So originally the Torah was given, it was for the Leviim to carry. But then the mitzvah from its very beginning was supposed to change, and the Kohanim were supposed to take on that task of carrying the ark. And the Ramban, Nachmanides, gets very upset by this. He says, how could it be that God is going to give a mitzvah and it's going to change? You know, when God gave the Torah, he gave it, and those mitzvahs are forever. Unless it's clearly written in a verse that the nature of the mitzvah was to change at some point in history, but generally the mitzvahs that were given are eternal. They've always been this way. They always will be this way. They're never going to change. So he says, no, the mitzvah is not that Kohanim carry it. The mitzvah is that Leviim carry the ark, as it was done in the desert. The Leviim carried it, and that's always the mitzvah for the Leviim to carry the ark. What about the verse here where it's Kohanim who are carrying? He said, well, that proves his point. Because here it was something unusual. There's a miracle that's about to occur. Bringing the ark into the Jordan River is going to cause the river to stop flowing and to split. That's a miraculous event. So a miraculous event, you had Kohanim carrying it. But generally, it was Leviim who carried the ark. That's what he argues. In terms of the reason for the mitzvah, the Sefer HaChinuch writes, and it's sort of a basic reason, that it's to show respect to the source of our uniqueness. Our uniqueness comes exclusively from Torah, from the study of Torah, and from the fulfillment of Torah's commands and Torah's obligations. And the ark, which contained the 10 commandments written on the 2 tablets, encapsulated the entire Torah, represented the Torah. So the ark has to be carried by the leaders of the community. It has to be carried by the Kohanim. There's an extra sign of respect for it, as an added sign of respect for the source of our uniqueness and our holiness. However, the verse said that while the ark was to go in front, there should be 2,000 amma of distance between you and the ark. Bamita, in a measurement, Al Tikrivu Elav, don't come too close to it. L'man asher teidu et haderech asher teilchu ba, so that you'll know the path to follow, for the ark will set the path for you. Ki lo avartem baderech mitmol shulshom, you haven't been along this path yesterday or the day before. And then, in verse Hey, Vayomer Yoshua el Ha'am, Yoshua tells the people, Hiskadashu, prepare yourselves. Presumably that means go to the mikvah. Ki machar yaseh Hashem bekir bechem nifla'ot, because tomorrow God is going to perform wonders. Vayomer Yoshua lakonim leimor, Yoshua told the Kohanim, Su'u es aron habris, carry the ark. Ve'ivru lifnei ha'am, and walk before the people. Vayisu es aron habris, they carried the ark. Ve'ilchu lifnei ha'am, and they went before the people. Vayomer Hashem el Yoshua, and Hashem told Yoshua, Hayom hazeh, on this day, achel gadelcha be'enei kol Yisrael, I will begin exalting you before Israel. Asher yedun, so that Israel will know, ki kasher hayisi emosha ehaye imach, the way I was with Moses, that's the way I will be with you. Va'atot etzaveh sakonim, and you should command the Kohanim, Nosei Arona Brislemor, those who carry the ark, to say, kevo'achem atzei me'ayardin bayardin ta'amodu, when you come to the edge of the waters of the Jordan, when you walk in, stop. And then what? We'll see. Vayomer Yoshua b'nei Yisrael, Yoshua, Joshua told the Jews, Kshuhena, come here. V'shimu es divrei Hashem Elokeichem, and hear the words of God your Lord. According to the Midrash, this is one of the examples of where a small amount of space held an enormous amount of people. All the Jews, according to the Midrash, miraculously squeezed into between the two poles of the ark. All of them could fit between these two poles. And here is where Yoshua told them this message. Vayomer Yoshua, and Yoshua told them, "Bezeis toidun, in this you will know, ki keil chai bekir b'chem, the living God is amongst you. V'horish yorish mipneichem esaknani v'esachiti, and he will uproot from before you the knani, the chiti, esachivi v'esaprizi, the chivi, the prizi, esagirgashi, the girgashi, the Emori, and the Yevusi." What's the meaning of this name of God, Kel Chai? You'll know that Kel Chai, the living God, is amongst you.
So what is the living God?
Right, so what's the deeper meaning of the living God? What does it mean, living God? Of course God's alive, he's the source of life.
Well, living God meaning living Torah, it's how you live it, you follow.
And there's a certain vitality to it, there's a certain freshness to it, force definitely, and also a constant newness, a constant renewal. Truth is that in works that reveal the deeper meaning of Torah, they explain that there are different emotions. They call them Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. These emotions, or these behaviors, emotional attributes, have many different aspects to them. Like a diamond has many different angles and many different lights that come out of it. One aspect is that Tiferes, that which comes before Netzach, harmony is associated with truth. So our forefather Yaakov is the paradigm of Tiferes. We talk about Emes LeYaakov, truth to Yaakov, give truth to Yaakov. A teacher, especially a teacher of Torah, has a certain amount of truth. He has this truth, he knows this truth. But now he has to give this truth over. When he wants to extend this truth outside of himself, he wants to go beyond himself, that's where we get into the realm of Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. Netzach, Hod, and Yesod in the language of the Zohar is what's called Levar Migufa, outside of the body, outside of oneself. A teacher has truth, he knows the truth, he's figured it out through experience, through study, through innate proclivity. Now he wants to give it to someone else. He wants to transmit it to someone else. He has to go outside of himself. There's netzach. Netzach means dominance. In dominance, a teacher overwhelms a student. Doesn't let the student even ask a question. Maybe he's screaming at the student. Maybe he's insisting, this is it. It used to be that there were teachers who used to hit students. So that would be the ultimate example of, you know, a student wants to assert himself and the teacher slaps him across the face. Absolutely not. That's netzach, that's dominance. The opposite is hod. Again, the teacher is going out of himself. But this time, instead of overwhelming the student, to some degree, he gets overwhelmed by the student. He starts on a particular subject. The student asks one question. Another student asks something which is slightly off. And a third asks something slightly off. And before you know, the teacher doesn't know where he is. He's scattered into the students. He's lost himself into the students. Yesod is the combination, the blending of netzach and hod. So Yesod is a teacher who is still a teacher. By no means has he dissipated. He's not controlled by the students. But he's not overwhelming them. He's giving them their space, allowing them to assert themselves. But while asserting themselves, giving over the truth, giving it over in a very clear way. The paradigm of Yesod is really a very great balance. It's truth is balance, but Yesod is a far deeper balance. Teferes, what's called Teferes, what we call truth, that's also balance. That's a balance within oneself, to know how to balance my desire to give versus my desire to withdraw, to step away. But Yesod is even more. I may have a perfect balance from my perspective, but that's not taking into account the student. It may be perfect from me, for my needs it's perfect, but it can still overwhelm a student. Netzach would be to overwhelm the student. Hod is to underwhelm the student. And Yesod is to really balance it. So it's perfectly calibrated according to the student's level, to where he's at, to acknowledge the student at what the student's at. Not to just, you know, there's some teachers who will come in and they have a very deep understanding and a very deep concept. They'll just say it over. And the people go out, they'll say, we loved it. They say, what did he say? I didn't understand. But we loved it. That's netzach. The teacher's overwhelming the student. It's way beyond where the student's at. And then there can be cases where a teacher underwhelms a student. He knows the level of the student because he knows the level of the students. So he just reflects back to the students where they're at. And then Yesod is the balance of taking into account the student and where the student is and giving the student some space. But yet still being the teacher, still asserting, still teaching and still guiding and still pushing and still giving an insight. It's really a state of enormous balance, not only balance within oneself, but balance within a broader context. At a level of tremendous, the same really is true in terms of a person's relationship with the natural world. Whenever we engage the natural world, we're going outside of ourselves. Soul is the self. To engage the natural world is like to be a teacher. It means to go outside of oneself. Say to eat or to drink or to sleep. All of these are ways in which we are engaging. Our soul is coming, and with our soul is trying to leave a stamp on the natural world, trying to engage the natural world. There can be different ways of approaching the natural world. There can be an approach of netzach, of overwhelming the physicality, of overwhelming it entirely.
Do you have to think along these lines at all? I mean, you do have to be at a point where you even want to integrate any of this into your...
Right.
Thank you. Right? I mean, it's just there for everyone? You know,
These are ideas.
Ideas, okay. Specifically, that there's something you do to access all of this stuff.
How can a person keep bear it in mind? Is that the question?
Yeah, I mean, like, you have to reach for these ideas, so to speak, somewhat, to have them in you at all. And they're in there, all of us, but, and Santa, you know, the others also. But
right.
That you have to reach for it, in a sense, for it, the what it can do to open. Is that
sure.
True?
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. That's why I'm asking on that level.
It's not necessarily so self-apparent to people.
Right.
Sure.
Okay.
Definitely
that's
not.
What I'm saying. Is it, right.
It's sort of revealed wisdom.
You have to reveal it yourself. You have to.
A person has to think about it, digest it.
Digest it. Okay. That, no, I thought maybe they're explaining it. That
has to digest it, right?
You know, there's something else there.
So in the natural world as well, you know, a person, say, having a cup of something to drink, a person can overwhelm the physicality. A person can be overwhelmed by the physicality. And the key is to achieve a real balance, where the physical is physical, but the spiritual is so strong that the spiritual can still assert its rule over the physical. And it's very, very, very difficult to really balance. You sowed to find real balance. You sowed really means ultimate balance. To find real balance is very hard. It's hard in relationships. It can be relationships where business, you know, a boss employee relationship where the boss just overwhelms the employees. There can be boss-employee relationships where the employees overwhelm the boss. To find the real balance is a very great challenge, very, very hard challenge to find that type of balance where the boss is still a boss and the employee is an employee, but yet the employee is given his space and the boss is still guiding and teaching. It's a very difficult endeavor to find that type of real balance in terms of raising children. You know, you want to guide children, but you can't overwhelm children. You can't be overwhelmed by the children. That would be hod. But how do you find the balance to give them their space, but yet to give them the direction? That's the challenge of yesod. Yesod is a state where there is full balance, where there is total balance between the physical and the spiritual. Balance within a relationship, balance within a family, balance with, you know, sort of perfect teachers.
So you're not in conflict when you're there.
Yeah.
The conflict is gone.
There's no conflict.
No conflict.
At all. That's a very difficult state to reach. Very difficult. So it is a great challenge to get to that point. But what Kabbalah or Hasidus, whatever one calls it, teaches is there's a tremendous vitality at that point. There's tremendous life, this is a very deep idea, life is really pleasure. So there's enormous pleasure at that point. An enormous pleasure that's almost unparalleled. Pleasure of the vitality of real balance. The paradigm of this was Yosef HaTzadik. If we think about Yosef, he must have been an unbelievable teacher. Let's think about this man. He's growing up, he's married to an Egyptian woman, according to the simple reading of the Psukim, Asnat, and he raises his children, Ephraim and Menashe, the only two Jews in all of Egypt, to reach such a level that when Yaakov sees them, Yaakov says, these are my children. These are like Reuven and Shimon. To raise children in an environment where the whole environment is against the tradition of Yaakov, the whole environment is a tradition of Egypt, and to raise children that are so, who've internalized the lesson so strongly, to withstand all of that. That's enormous, enormous force of an unbelievable teacher, of a teacher who was the best possible teacher. And the best teacher gives his students the space to assert themselves, but doesn't get overwhelmed by the students. He is so firmly attached to where he's at. He is so certain of the truth of his message that he can let them assert themselves, and then he will convey the message in a way that will come through, and they'll accept it as their own. It's a very difficult task, but clearly Yosef could do that. And so Yosef is the paradigm of the Midah of Yesod. That's what you find about Yosef. Yosef is the source of life for Egypt. At this state of balance, that's where there's tremendous vitality, tremendous life. And you find about Yosef that he is a source of enormous, he's the support for all of Egypt. He's the one who gives out the grain, that which they need to keep them alive. He's the source of life. He's a phenomenal manager of resources. He knows when to give and when to hold back, when to collect. And he's tremendous balance. And to hold a country together in a state of tremendous stress. Yosef is a paradigm of this enormous balance and vitality. Phenomenal teacher. You know, one of the ideas that comes out of this lesson is that to be a really great teacher, has to be a lot of vitality, a lot of feelings, a lot of passion for the material, a lot of excitement about the ideas. The name of God that reflects this type of a relationship with the world, the relationship when God relates to the world through what's called Yesod, is Kel Chai, living God. So Yehoshua, who's a descendant of Ephraim, a descendant of Yosef. Yehoshua is from Yosef's family. Yosef is the primary person who achieved this type of a relationship with God. Yehoshua says, now you're going to see, Jews, come close. Ki kel chai b'kirbachem. You're going to see this tremendous vitality, this tremendous balance, this tremendous strength, this ability to go out into a place of opposition, and to stand so firm, and not to be swayed. That's the force of Kel Chai, with which you will uproot the Kanani, the Chiti, the Chivi, the Prizi, the Girgashi, the Emori and the Yavusi. In the books of Kabbalah, it's taught that the primary way of achieving this type of vitality, this type of balance, is through being very careful in the laws of tznius, the laws of modesty, the laws of being circumspect in the relationships between men and women. That's the key way to attain this type of vitality. And that's very hard. There's no question that that's a very difficult task, the Gemara says. There are two major vices of man are stealing money and immodesty in all of its realms. So that's the challenge to enter the land of Israel. The land of Israel requires that we have a great degree of holiness in this realm of modesty. Spiritually, it's been revealed that that's a very big key, perhaps the key, to entry into the land of Israel and attaining the land of Israel. It's a great degree of modesty. That's why the Zohar says that we find that when the Jews are in Israel, the land of Israel is flowering. But when the Jewish people are not in Israel, then the land of Israel is not flowering. But there have been Arabs who've lived in Israel for many years. So the Zohar says, well, the Arabs come from Yishmael, the son of Abraham. And they also have a degree of this concept. They are seemingly quite careful in terms of the realm of modesty. Many of their women cover themselves fully from head to toe. They have a circumcision. They do things that seem to show a degree of restraint and modesty in this realm. But the Zohar says, I wouldn't say, you know, who am I to say it, but this is the Zohar. The Zohar says it's empty. It's not real. It's a show. Behind the show, there's an enormous immodesty. Whether it's harems, or the whole view of the world to come, or their literature, there's an enormous immodesty behind the show of great modesty. So since it's only external, it's not internal, it's sort of an empty covenant. So when they're in Israel, they can be in Israel, but Israel isn't filled. There are no trees. There are no cities. There are little shanty towns. There are Bedouins. There's darkness. There's deserts. But when the Jews come with the merit of the Bris, the Jews come and they can fill the land of Israel. This vitality, the secret to this vitality is to be achieved through modesty. Through modesty between men and women. And that's what Yehoshua is saying, Ki kel chai bekirbachem. You're going to see now the living God, the vital God. You're going to see enormous force, enormous vitality, enormous strength, enormous balance. And with that merit, with the merit of the Bris, with the merit of Yesod, you'll be able to acquire the land of Israel. You'll be able to take it, to inherit it, and to possess it. Okay, so that's a little bit of what's going on.